Okay, so Yisha Koch,
and you're learning, coming out the week after week, being able to prepare, take b'chinas for Harris, taking a chrayis for it. That is a wonderful thing. So in mivatel nisso chadchila is like this real scary thing, and then all of a sudden you realize it has significant applications. And how do we ever do it? So I think that's what that's what we're trying to pick up from tonight. There are times, right? You start with research. Tzadi test sifhei, right? In vatlan shachachila, straight out, right? Not you're. It sounds like a low plug. Never allowed to do it. So that would mean, all right. Well, I guess you can't do it ever. So there are a couple of times that we do accept bittel. Actually, a real good one that just came to me that they're not going to use your matzah on Pesach. By the way, is probably includes bittel chametz in it. But maybe we'll save that for Pesach time. Why the best matzahs come from Arizona? We'll talk about that down the line. But we do it a few times in the regular food industry. Some of it is a little bit subject to machlokas. Some of it is not so subject to machlokas. It's pretty obviously done. So we'll try to cover some of those topics tonight. So number one, what did I write here for number one? So number one is a tshuva from Rav Moshe. Do we cover that? Rav Moshe, as it was asked, I wrote down the Kori. Yeah, Yoreh Deyachilik Bey Simin Mem Aleph. So Rav Moshe has a tshuva about margarine. Margarine was hot on the scene then. At that point, all of a sudden you had a par of butter, and that all of a sudden, you know, that really changed the game with regards to that. Then leads to all the par of otherwise dairy things that we have today, which is a Marasayan issue, et cetera, et cetera. But he's dealing there with regards to an issue of can we rely on. Issue specifically there was that he needed to have a Mashkiach present. However, there was not going to be able to be a Mashkiach present in theory you would have to have a Mashkiach present to do whatever kashering was going to be necessary. However, they suggested that the place does a run-through. They're required by law to do like some kind of run-through where essentially is a kashering process, and it's required to be done on Friday afternoons when the Mashkiach isn't able to be there because it's too close to Shabbos. But they said maybe we could rely on the fact that that's happening, that we know that that's happening because the government requires it, and it has to be clean. If it's not clean, then the camp plant is going to be shut down, right? You could hear echoes of another heter that Rav Moshe has, which we probably shouldn't speak about too much in this room. But can we rely on that? But over the course of this tshuva, Rav Moshe does raise the issue of can we rely on bittel that is done? I mean, even if one of the things that he says is even if they're not really doing the kashering completely as if we want it to be done, well, you know, whatever is going to be left there is going to be bittel anyway. So can we instruct this to happen knowing that we're going to somewhat be reliant on bittel? And Rav Moshe says to set up a hechsher l'chadchila, where we're going to rely on bittel, he says, is technically not a problem because it's a guy doing the bittel. It's a non-Jewish owned company, and non-Jews don't have an isser of im v'atel l'sur chadchila. It sounds like it's an isser on the Jew doing it. So if a non-Jew is doing it, it's okay, non-Jew is doing it. That's not our problem. And now we just judge what is there after the fact, right? So could we do that? So Rav Moshe says to give a hechsher on such a thing, he says, uses the terminology of mechur hadavar, that it's just like not nice. That it's not nice, it's not appropriate for a kashrus organization to be involved in giving a hechsher to something that you know that bittel is taking place, l'chadchila, in a way that, now we'll talk about a couple of examples where maybe it is being done, but where in a way that a Jew would not be able to do it, and we're going to instruct the guy and say, you know, if you do this, so then, you know, we could assume that it's nullified and it's going to be okay. So just first of all, anytime you start talking about nullification with non-Jewish owners of restaurants, like, you're asking for trouble. Like, it's like not a place that you want to be. But even so, like to get into that situation where he is, where you're instructing on bittel, He says you should avoid. So that's the general practice of kashrus agencies in America today, is that we don't get involved in that kind of thing. Like, we don't you could have some milk in there, or you could have some gelatin in there, or something along those lines, just regardless of whether that, you know, it could be some of those things are not actually ever going to be bottled anyways, but even besides that, right, so that's not a place that we want to go. Okay, so that then leads to, I think, the first Lamaisa issue, which comes up, down the block from here, down the block, a couple of blocks down, and that is the issue of smoothies, the issues of where we are instructing on things to be bottled. All right, so that gets into that Taz. Tazayin, right? The Taz where it says Im Avatal Nisra Chachila.
So
I'm referring to Ritas, right? So what's going on in Ritas? Before we take a step back here, so most of the Ritas there, and people ask me all the time, do you really need a Hashkacha in Ritas? Well, yes and no. If you know what you're doing, you don't necessarily need a Hashkacha in any Ritas. And between us, you could really go into any Ritas. In fact, if you go to Great Adventure, I've always been astounded to see the long line of Face Yaakov girls that are waiting online for Ritas in Great Adventure, despite the fact that there is no Hekshir there. However, there are a couple of things that do require a little bit of a Hekshir. Number one is not all the toppings are kosher that they sell at standard Ritas. And another thing are that they might sell other things there that are not kosher, but essentially all the syrups and all the water, right, is kosher. Except there are a couple of the flavors that do add a couple of things in besides syrup. So there are some flavors sometimes that have candy that's thrown in there for that's obviously going to be an issue. But what I'm talking about here for our context is some of the raspberry flavored and I think strawberry flavor, things like that. So that actually contains real raspberry. It doesn't just contain real raspberry that it like comes in the syrup. It contains real raspberry in that they grind up the raspberry in the store. They bring in fresh produce into the store and they cut some of them up. The way we run it here is that they have a special produce cutting knife which is set aside, which, that itself is probably a chumrah. But nevertheless, they're taking raspberries and putting it in. Now, our assumption with raspberries in the kashrus world is that they're miyut hamatzoi of them. However we define Mira Matzo, we could talk about bugs. We'll do the bugs in a different discussion. But the assumption is that these things have Mira Matzo, and to go ahead and just take fresh raspberries in the store and eat them, that is probably... bugs. They have thrips. They have thrips in them. So
to explain what
Mira Matzo is. That when it comes to things that we're misupik about, whether it's contained or whether it's not contained. So if it more often than not has such a thing, that's what we call rove. So therefore, it's going to be prohibited to eat. If it's a very minute, what about if it's less than rove? So d'oraisa, it becomes permitted to eat. However, the rabbanon came along and said, listen, if there's a pretty good chance that it's going to have this problem, however, whatever that problem is, so we're going to demand that you check. So that's why when it comes to meat, for example, when you check an animal, so you have to check the lungs, but you don't have to check other issues, right? Any illness that an animal is going to have is going to define it as a trefa. So there, the Gemara gives, I think, something like 50 examples of what potential trefos would be, but we only check for one of them. We only check to see if the lungs are smooth or not, or that's sclat, or even if it's not, whatever we're checking for with regards to the lungs. So we only check that. We don't check to make sure that the brain is intact. We don't make sure that the kidneys are intact. We don't make sure that all the bones are intact, even though a lot of those things might actually make it a trefa. We don't check those. Why? Because the vast majority of the cases are that it's not a problem. The only thing that we check are lungs, because lungs, there's a what we call a miut hamatzui. There's a significant percentage of animals that have lung problems. So what is that percentage? So that's a multi-million dollar question that people don't... We normally have settled at around 10%. However, even though nowadays probably 35% of animals get put to the trafe category, which is not really much of a loss to do so, but we normally assume that it's probably 10% is a problem, and that's sort of the number that is used out there. So any time that you're going to have a problem more than 10% of the time, you're going to require a bedika beforehand. Okay, so... problem is transfer. That's sort of the model, the paradigm that is then transferred over to the bug situation. It doesn't fit exactly, because with animals, it's easy to say 10% of animals have a problem or not, and the whole animal becomes trafe. When it comes to checking for bugs, it doesn't exactly work that way, right? 10% of what? 10% of bites, 10% of servings, 10% of shippings, 10% of packages. It's very hard to figure out what exactly the 10% number is, but that's also for another shear, for another time, etc. But the assumption is that raspberries, A, do have that amount of bugs, and B, are also very difficult to clean, very difficult to check. So that's therefore, fresh raspberries, kashrus organizations are loath to, do not really allow it. The OU on their website, I realize they does have a checking mechanism that they do suggest, but they do not allow it for their caterers. I mean, they say, at home, if you really, and they even have recipes on their website that use whole raspberries, and then like tell you how to check, and the checking of the raspberries is like this long, and the recipe is like this long, right? You have to drop them from a certain height and see if anything pops out. Not recommended. Okay, so that's when it comes to whole raspberries, right? However, what's the story with regards... So what's the issue when it comes to bugs, right? When it comes to these thrips, so if I make a raspberry smoothie, So whatever bugs are going to potentially be in that smoothie is going to be way less than 1/60th of the size, right? However, when it comes to bugs, the real concern with bugs is not that it's taking up more than 1/60th, it's that the bugs are a barrier. The bugs are whole, and I guess you've got it later in Taruvus, where you learn the halacha of beria lo batal, that if it is an entire entity, it's not going to be batal. So if you have an entire thrip, an entire bug that's swimming all around your raspberry, whatever, right? So that's an issur d'oraisa of eating the bug. So what are we doing with regards to these smoothies? So we're not checking them. What we're saying, what we're going to do is we're going to take the raspberry and we're going to mush it up. We're going to put it in a blender and we're going to determine the industry is pulverize it in order to make it really small, such that there is really no chance that there is an entire bug in there, right? So that's great, right? So even though there might be pieces of bugs, there might be legs of a bugs and the arms of a bugs, and there are, sorry to gross you out, but there are, right? That's okay, right? It is, we're going to assume that it is batal. The only problem here is that, wait a second, what did we just do here? We just took something that was usser and ground it up, and now it is mutter, because what was in there before was not batal, but because I have now ground it up, it now is batal, right? We now have created a bittel. We have now done that, right? I've done that potentially biyadayim, right? So is that mutter or is that aser? So that's where the Taz here steps in Zion and says, right? Yesh garsinim uvordim ein kavanaso rak ledavar acher gun letakin hadvash mutter. He's talking about honey, which is a similar type of situation where there was something in there that was cold and you want to heat the honey up, and therefore you're causing bittel, because therefore whatever that is going to spread. I think that's the case that he's referring to.
It's very like the rugby adverb, the bee legs.
Right, but it somehow becomes bittel by.
It gets like evaporated. It gets like melted.
Yeah, right. I'm not. That's kind of gross, but I'm not really sure if that's actually what happens. But either way, right? His suggestion is what you're doing. But why are you boiling it? You're not boiling it because you want the bee legs to become bittel. You're boiling it because you want it to become thinner in order so that it'll be able to slide through the strainer more easily or something like that. Right. So therefore, that is bittel. L'takein for l'davar acher. So is that mutter, is that aser? So the Taz says if it's impossible to do it another way, that is mutter, right? The only thing is that applicable over here to our raspberry smoothies? Well, I don't know, not exactly. You could clean it, you just don't feel like cleaning it, right? You want to be able to now go, potentially, buy raspberry, either fresh raspberries or frozen raspberries, I looked around today. There is a tweet from the CRC saying that frozen raspberries without a hechsher, provided that there are no other ingredients, are mutter to buy. Right? What they don't tell you is that it's usur to eat. Right? You're not permitted to eat them straight up, but you are permitted to take them and then put them into your blender. Right? Potentially. Why? Because that is being mevatelit for a different reason. What's the reason I'm crushing it? I'm not crushing it because I know there's whole bugs in there, and the only way for me to eat it is to crush it up and nullify the bugs. I'm crushing it because I want a smoothie, right? I looked at the OU website, and the OU gives me all these recipes for what to do with raspberries, and I want to do that. That's a davar acher. So according to the Taz, that potentially would be mutter, although one could argue and say, yeah, well, there is an inyan acher. There is a way to clean them. It's just very difficult to clean. However, the Pisri Tshuva quotes, Pisri Tshuva Dalit here, does quote from the Prima Gadin that says, afim efsha rakshahu tircha nami shari, that even if it's possible, but it's a big tircha to do, so even that would be permissible. So based on this rundown, based on this Shulchan Aruch Taz Pisrei Tshuva, so many poskim and many kashrus agencies, including the Keystone K, do permit this type of thing to go and crush the to take raspberries and crush them for jelly, to go and crush them for smoothies, to go and crush them for ices or things like that, knowing that we're going to be bittel. Now,
whether they're frozen or not frozen, or you're
yeah, either way, it's not going to, I mean, the mice, it's frozen between us.
CRC needs to have a different policy. That's what they said. Frozen was okay.
frozen in general. Uh-huh. Okay. There's two aspects to that. Number one is a general frozen fruit and frozen vegetable thing, right? If there's no other ingredients, does that become mutter, right? So that probably stays. The bug issue, right? I think that may have changed, right? Yeah. Is that right? Okay.
We just have a policy about frozen berries.
That comes off. Everything comes off in general. Okay. Okay. That could be. These tweets, they stay forever. You know? Like that's tough. Now there are a couple of nuances then within this halacha. Number one is who's doing the bittling, right? So is it a Jew or is it a non-Jew? So I think most folks would even say a Jew could go ahead and do this, right? You have a Jew, right? You go to your house and do this. Now the owner of Rita's down the block is not Jewish. Nobody that works in that store is Jewish, right? So does that maybe even make it better, right? Because he's doing it on your behalf. Well, yes and no. If he's doing it on your behalf, so that's where Rav Moshe would say, Mechura Hadavar. So for that reason, Mechura Hadavar, meaning if he's doing it for you, right? Even if he's doing it perhaps for a different reason. So for that reason, the Star K is actually Machmer on this Nakuda. They would, if you go to their website, they do have an article about smoothies, and they tell people, meaning the instructions to the Balabatim are, do not do this, right? That is not permitted. They hold that it's not permitted to take raspberries and crush them up and turn them into, even though you know that it's going to be crushed, because that's a problem of Im Batalness or Chachila. And beyond that, they would not give a hechsher to a company that does that. So for that reason, the Star K, right.
They don't hold the Pesach Shema?
It appears not. Yeah, it appears not. Or they would say that it's possible, or how big a tircha, whatever. They are machmer in that. So they do not give a heksher. They will not give a heksher on raspberry yogurt or their own raspberry jams. There is you will not find a Star K on those items. However, I did check today with someone in the Star K. I said, so does that mean that you aser jelly donuts? Right? Would that mean that Star K caterers would not be able to serve jelly donuts on Hanukkah? So they said, no. We would buy it for somebody else. Meaning for us to give for us to instruct someone to do it. That's ein vatan l'shulchan. For us to tell a guy to do it. And for us to then give a heksher on it, that's Mechura Dover. But once it's already made by somebody else and it shows up and it has an OU on it, so then collect the votes, then we'll go ahead and use it. So therefore we do permit the Dunkin' Star K does give a heksher on Dunkin' Donuts that does sell jelly donuts, right? And they will permit the jelly donuts to be used. They will prevent and potentially
they could have been made for non-Jews in there.
Right. It's already made,
It's not personalized, is it?
Right.
You walk in, they make your own personal smoothie.
Right, and then and then what exactly is a heksher? When you're giving a heksher on something, does that mean that you're turning it into them making it for you? Not really, but even that's where Moshe, the Mechura Dover, comes into place. That's why they're not getting involved. But once it's already made and it's kosher and it has another heksher on it, so then they will use it. So that is their policy. Okay, so then moving along here, we get to the Worcester sauce, right? Is this come up yet already? Okay, so there is a product on the market called Worcester sauce, right? It is a steak sauce, but it contains the official Worcester sauce recipes. Contains anchovies, contains fish, which is kosher. The only thing is mixing anchovies and meat is not so okay, right? That is not something that we go ahead and do. Now, the OU has sometimes given an OUF on those products, saying it's OU fish, right? There's fish in it, and buyer beware. However, the OU will also say that if it is less than 1/60th, if it's less than Osein Tam, they will just put a plain OU parv, and they will not say OUF. So what is that? So what is that based on? So first of all, the first time I ever heard this psak, I was like, wait a second, why are the companies putting in fish if it's not no Saint Tom, right? Right? If the Mon of Shach, right? If it's not no Saint Tom, so then what are they bothering with it? And if it is no Saint Tom, so even if it's less than 1/60th, that would mean that it's some kind of intense flavor, which is not going to be batal b'shishim anyway. So like, what in the world is going on there? So then I discovered that no. The issue is real hardcore homemade 100% for the Bikiyim, Worcester sauce. So that contains fish. Right? That contains real high amounts of fish. However, to make that on a mass scale, or to make it on any scale, is a very time-consuming process. So therefore, what large-scale companies do is that they'll make a fish flavor, which will not be fish, that will just be fish flavor, which is, you know, whatever, however it's made by chemicals, and then they'll, like, be yotze-zine by putting in, like, a little bit of anchovies as well. So therefore, yes, it's true, in a way, it is no Saint Tom, but the Tom that you would taste from it is not from the fish, it's from the chemicals, right? And therefore, it's not really going to be a no Saint Tom. So, okay, but we're still left with a little bit of an issue here. Number one is okay, but I mean, you get this product, right? So is it batel already? Or is it, meaning it's there, it's just technically would be batel, but by me mixing it with my steak, right, I'm in a way nullifying it to the steak, right? It's not really a yedias haTaruvus, right, until that point, until you recognize and say, oh, like, there's no Taruvus really when it's all kosher. It's only a taruvus when it's mixed potentially with something that is aser, and then we turn around and say, oh, well, but it's batel, right? So is that permissible? So there's one other nekuda that is then thrown into this, and that is that it's not really aser, right? The issue with fish and meat is not an issue of iser, it's an issue of sakana. So that could play a role both l'chumra and l'kula, right? The halachos of fish and meat are not found here. They're found in Or Chaim, and they're found in Kuf, Tes, Vav, or Zion, or someplace in that range. There's someplace dealing with the, with the unpeeled garlic and eggs and like that area of halacha, right? So does that change the rules when it comes to bittel? So there are, let's say, yeah, darn right it does, right? We're not going to say bittel, right? Because we're dealing with sakana, we will never say bittel when it comes to fish and meat, and therefore it ends up being more machmir than that. The other area where it might be more machmir also is by children. Generally, when it comes to children, we are not machmir for dini derabanan, only dini deraisa when it comes to kashrus, especially with the timtum haliv issue. But it could be that this is a sakana, so therefore you actually have to be more machmir when it comes to children than you do otherwise. But nevertheless, in this situation,
they're more machmir with children.
Yeah, potentially, if there's an iser when it comes to children that are enohigio lechinuch, right? So we generally when it comes to deoraisa, we're going to be machmir. We're not going to give them a hamburger or a cheeseburger. Assuming a cheeseburger is an iser deoraisa, which it's Tzayin, right? But assuming that that's an Issa Doraisa, right? We're not going to give them that. But if a kid has a hamburger and then right afterwards starts going crazy that they want their ice cream, so we're Mikra din Makel, whether it's a good idea to give them ice cream, right? You know, whatever. But that's a parenting decision. But Mikra din Al Pi Halacha, plus it's only a Dindur Abana, we're not going to assume Timtum Aleiv. We're not going to assume that it's going to damage anything. We're also not going to assume that they're not Higiel Lechinuch anyways. So different Mikra din that becomes Mutter. However, when it comes to a fish and meat combination, so they were going to be more machmir on them because that's a sakana issue.
Are more lenient. Sakana is more machmir.
But, right, potentially. So, but what about this issue? Would we say ein mevatlin isur l'chatchila because we're mixing this small amount of anchovy with the meat? So there, Rav Yashav says, I didn't see it. All I saw was on the YU website. It quotes Rav Yashav as being matir that din because he said it's not. The word is in mevatlin iser l'chachila. He says it's not an iser. So therefore, assuming that you would say that fish would be batel v'shishim when it comes to meat, so you could say the same. You could even be mevatel fish l'chachila when it comes to meat, which is helpful, right? Which is potentially a cool. There are yeshivas. I would guess in Lubavitch yeshivas are probably machmir on this. But my brother went to Gush Tahar Etzion. He said when they get to the Friday night meal, there is one fork there, right? And they're instructed that after the fish course, take your fork, wipe it down, and then use it for meat, right? So. Now, the truth is, there potentially you're really cleaning it, but even if you're not really cleaning it, so all right, so it's batel. It's not that big a deal. Yeah.
So just to double check, ruling regarding Worcestershire sauce, they would apply both to ones that are marked OU fish, like Liam Perrin's marked OU fish, but like French is marked OU par.
Right. So that is no. So the truth is, it's a little ambiguous on the website. I think. In theory, they would only be makel if it is really batel b'shishim. However, However, a lot of them that are marked, it said on the website, a lot of them that are marked OUF are really OUP. They just, the company opted to go OUF. So, because of other liability issues. So they just wanted to announce that there is fish in it for those people that are allergic to fish and things like that.
Why would that, theoretically, why would that cashier's decision be given to the company rather than the agency itself to determine whether it's fish or water?
No, the agency itself is going to tell them, it gives them permission to do, they'll tell them, listen, you know, we are willing to go OU parv on this. There is a little bit of fish in it because the company and the company might say no, plus there's a little bit of fish in it, we don't want any liability from the fish allergic people or the it's not just Jews that look for the kosher symbols, right? Other people, plenty of people look for the kosher symbols for those kind of, that kind of information. So the company might say, you know, with all due respect, Rabbi, we want to make sure that they know that there's fish in there, even though technically, for as far as the OU is concerned, they don't really care, but the company might want to announce it for their own reasons. So for that reason, you could, the OU on this site said you could call them and ask them, and they'll tell you whether it's less or more than Shishim. Okay, so now moving along here. So based on that idea with Rav, moving on from that idea of Rav Yasha, right? What's he saying? He's saying that, well, it's not a isser. It's not an isser. It's a an imvatlan isser. L'chalchila only applies if there is an isser involved. So now that then comes. I'm excited about sharing this with the great chocolate machine challenge of 2022 that took place Jody's place, Sweet Trading Company. So she bought, she called me and said, I want to buy a new chocolate machine. I'll save a ton of money if we buy a used chocolate machine, right? Is it possible to kosher a used chocolate machine? And I said, I'm sure we'll figure it out. So that was a mistake, right? I shouldn't have like agreed to this before I found out a little bit more, because I just assumed it comes in really clean. It's just really a question of koshering to be okay to kosher. So it's more complicated than that. Chocolate machines in general apparently is a very complicated issue. Baharaya, the whole Trader Joe's chocolate chip debate of, I don't know, 2013, right, when they went from parf to dairy, and then Baruch Hashem, they were chozer b'tshuva in the last couple of years, and remade it to be parf. But chocolate is just a very delicate thing, and it also hovers around Yad Soledes Bo. I mean, chocolate is not really supposed to get too hot. It also can't be too cold, right? So the optimal chocolate curing temperature is someplace around 100 degrees. The machines don't really go above, to really melt it, they'll go to around 115. Yad Soledes Bo is generally 120, and the machines will really go up as high as 130, right? So we can't just go around and say, well, it's never been Yad Soledes Bo. It could have been Yad Soledes Bo. I mean, you can go and you could see. So there is a koshering issue when it comes to these chocolate machines. Beyond that, apparently, they are not cleanable. From the company's perspective, they will tell you that you are not allowed to clean it. They say you can't put water through it. If you put water through it, so then it voids all the warranties, plus where it could get stuck, and there could be mold, and the company, they're very makbid on not cleaning it with other types of cleaners.
Can you clean it with chocolate?
Ah, so then can you kosher with chocolate? So there is a, I think the Rama is machmir on koshering Bashar Mashi, right. So we're generally machmer on that, although I didn't look back at it today. Although there's some holes, meaning it's not a across the board cool. And potentially we could be makel here. Somebody that worked in the Star K while I was working through this issue, he confided, I shouldn't have said Star K, but somebody in one of the major kosher agencies, when I talked to him about this issue, he told me that, I shouldn't say that. I could say it's a star cape, because Rav Heineman is machmer across the board on using Shar Mashim. So they wouldn't do it. But he told me that in general, the koshering with chocolate, even if you want to be makel, is not so, I mean, what are a lot of agencies are going to be machmer on it, because what does it mean? It means that someone's going to go in and, they'll do a run and put it to the side. Now, that run really needs to be above Yad Soledes Bo. But often it's not Yad Soledes Bo. It's hovering around Yad Soledes Bo. So just because you're going and doing a run and saying, oh, we did a run and we're putting it to the side or putting it into the milchik section, even though it's parv, you know, you need to really be careful about it, and therefore they're not so thrilled about kashering with chocolate itself. So, however, so now this thing comes in, and I assume, you know, it's a used machine. A used machine, we're only, like, you know, it's going to be clean, right? It's a machine that went to a company, went back to the manufacturer, and then they send it out. So I'm like, obviously it's going to be clean. No, it wasn't clean, right? Because just as they tell you not to clean it, they also don't clean it, right? So you could see chocolate in it. Like there's really, like mamish, there's chocolate sitting in there. And how do we know? So there's, and she needs to use it for parv. That's the other thing. She needs to use this machine to turn it to a parv degree. And just by the way, in the world of kashrus, there's nothing that is more scary than the word parv. Like parv is like the scariest word because it's hard to, you got to keep everything else really away, right? In your home kitchen. So all right, something is.
Was the machine, was it real not kosher, or was it? No.
So first of all, you can take a step back and say, so first of all, with parv, just so you know, plus to certify something in your own kitchen, you could use something as parv even if it was made in milchiks or fleishiks pots, right? But to certify something as parv, you can't do that, right? So certifying something as parv, it needs its own kalim, it needs its own, you know, zip code, essentially, in order to ensure that. So she needs to use this as parv, and there's chocolate in it, and A, we don't know if it was kosher or not kosher chocolate, and then B, we also didn't know whether it was parv or dairy. Now, she came and said that she could tell that it was parv, meaning you could tell that it looks different when it's milchiks versus parv, but like, okay, but she's like, I know you're not going to rely on that, but just say, I think that it's parv. Beyond that, we were also able to certify, and this actually we have letters, that the company themselves, the chocolate company, the chocolate machine making company, right, they only use kosher chocolate in their thing. Plus, she's not the first one to have this issue. So there have been, over the years, there's been plenty of kashrut that have gone to, they're not actually certified, but they've been looked at many times, and they certainly use part of the only thing is a used machine, so how do we know what the previous thing was? So she was like, well, can you tell me? Like, I could find out. So, we don't know. Actually, then they were able to find out, and she was able to know and able to document that they only use kosher chocolate in that place. However, it could very well have been milchiks chocolate in that place, right? So now we have this thing. I think we could say with pretty good certainty that it is chocolate, kosher chocolate in this thing, but I don't know if it's parv or dairy chocolate in this thing. So that's when I said, well, wait a second. That, I think, you could be mevatel with chocolate. Meaning, how much, so can we estimate how much chocolate is dirtier? So it's not a zero amount, but it is, you know, it's not that large of an amount. It's just, there's dirt, there's powder, there's chocolate dust throughout this thing. So if we, and generally the way these things work is you take a 20-pound block of chocolate and you put it in, and then it melts, and then it goes through the machine. So I said, if we could ascertain that it's, you know, less than, whatever it was, whatever the equation was, right, that it's less than shishim, so I think we could put the parv through, run it through, take that, and potentially that would be parv anyways. I mean, potentially we would say, parv, isn't that im vatal nisr l'chachila?
It's not nisr.
It's not nisr, right, very good. There's nothing wrong with making parv chocolate that you can't have with steak, right? It's parv chocolate that may have a little bit of tam of dairy in it. Fine. So what she does need, she has a parv kitchen and a dairy kitchen. That's the way the setup is there. So she said, fine. She needs parv chocolate anyways on the dairy side for some things that she makes. So she says, we're going to do a run. We'll take it. We'll take all the chocolate out of it. Obviously not all of it because you can't really clean the machine, but enough that it's well buttle, right? And that she'll move to the dairy side. And then she continued to use it as a parv machine going forward, right? And why isn't that in mevatel nisr l'chachila? Because there's no iser. There's no iser in the things that she made.
Would that apply even to people who hold that chol stam is not kosher? Or just if you hold of had to.
Yeah, so I would say you can ask your uncle about poskim, mm-hmm. But I would say it would be fine. Meaning, I think we're why? Because it's batel. It's not just Rav Moshe's heter. It's A, we're being mevatelit. And you're going to say, well, you're being mevatelit in a, you're being mevatel an isser. I'm going to say, I'm not being Mevatel and Isser, and I'm doing it, right? So, so for you to come to me and say, we want you to be Mevatel it, right? That Rav Moshe might say, well, that's Mechur, that's a nice thing to do. But that's not what was going on there. So I think it's Mutter Maker than even for the real stark Chalav Yisrael people.
If you hadn't been able to confirm that it was for sure kosher chocolate, then you would have said, Eim Mevatel Esser?
I think we would have. I was getting nervous, yeah. if we wouldn't have been able to confirm it, I shouldn't say what we would have done, because I hadn't yet brought it to the rabbinic board. I mean, I think Rav Shmuel was involved, and I was, very, you know, once I got an okay that it was all kosher, I was pretty, you know, not every halachic the way the Keystone K is set up now is like I'm the gopher, and there's a rabbinic board that I report to. Now I was on the rabbinic board beforehand, right? So as I say, I got a promotion and a demotion at the same time. So like I know a little bit about this stuff. I have some authority, but I generally will not make any type of controversial decision without following up with the rabbanim. Now technically, the rabbanim, anybody has a veto. But, you know, I don't necessarily have to bring every shaila to the full board, right? You know, for certain things, like, you know, some people, you know, will sign off on it and assume that everybody else would sign off on it also, right? So there's, like, just a little bit of political how you need to sort of work that out.
Without putting you on the spot, the fact that, it could be hechshered kosher.
Right.
It could also be not hechshered kosher, but maybe it's still not an isser.
So... But well, you know, like, how usher could chocolate
like
really
being, be? Right, you're not being vatel chazer in the machine.
Ask, like what could go into it that
right.
would be trade?
Right, right. So that would have taken a little bit. You know, that's what I'm saying.
Yeah,
right.
It's a trickier question. Okay.
Yeah, right. Probably 95% of the chocolate in the world, whether it's hechsher or not, is probably kosher. Right, probably is fine. But you know, when it comes to, as I tell people, is the difference between kashering, you know, giving a psak for someone's kitchen versus giving a psak for certification. Right, when we're certifying something, we're certifying something. So, all right, we got to you know, that requires sometimes bigger chumras. Okay, so along those lines of not being vatel, so there's a bigger chiddush that I heard. So a couple of years ago, Rav Belsky was the posek for the OU, along with Rav Shachter. The two of them worked together for many years. Rav Belsky was nifter, I guess, 5-6 years ago already at this point, not exactly sure, but before he passed away and then after he passed away. So before he passed away, they sort of were collecting his psakim as a, schus for refuah shlema. Then afterwards, they republicized all of these as like amazing beliefs. Or not psakim of Rav Yisrael Belsky Zatzal. So my favorite one is the following, the Eim Vatlin Israel Chachila issue. And that is, now, bad news, I realize this probably would not be applicable to the Chol of Yisrael people here. But it's cool anyways. Right, if you go to a Wawa's, right, and you want to get a coffee, right? So, and you want to have milk with your coffee. So, okay, so the milk is Chol of Stam. Fine. What about using the non-dairy creamer? So non-dairy creamer is usually certified as OUD. Now, is it OUD? Now, or why, you know, the OUD versus DE thing is something else you could get me off on for a while. But the it's not DE. It does contain a milk protein that is known as caseinate, right? Caseinate, and not just does it contain, not just do these non-dairy creamers contain caseinate, it contains 2% caseinate, like above shisha. So it's not butyl, which means that in these dairy, non-dairy creamers, right, if you drink it, you are drinking milk, essentially. You are drinking milk. So to have a fleishik meal and then to take creamer, I don't recommend it anyways, but B, even disregarding the health issues, right, that would be a problem of waiting. So what about drinking coffee? So Rebelsky suggested the following. He says, aha, but what do? I'm not drinking the creamer plain. I'm taking the creamer and I'm putting it in my coffee. And if I take the caseinate and I measure it against the coffee, so that is less than shisha, right? So therefore, Revelsky tainud that it is mutter. That it is mutter to have a barbecue, and then how am I going to get home? I'm so tired from having the barbecue. No problem. Stop at the rest stop, get a coffee, and put in your and use the non-dairy creamer in it. There's a little bit of milk in it. That's okay, right? It's being buttled. It's being nullified into the rest of the coffee. So this is like a game changer. Like, what? Really? Really? Like that is amazing. That is amazing. So, why is it not in mevatel nisul chachila, right? Aren't you actively being mevatel it? So he says, no, you're not being mevatel anything, right? What are you doing, right? You are making a coffee. There's nothing wrong with a coffee that has a little bit of milk in it, right? It's I mean, maybe the thing is dairy, but it's batel. But even though you're making a coffee, it could be made for somebody else. It could be made for you. It's the same. I mean, it's a little bit of a nuance. It's a little different.
You're making it for yourself.
Ah, so does the fact that I'm making it for myself, does that make a difference? So Rebelsky said no. All right, that's the nekuda that some argue
Why?
On.
Why?
Why?
Because you were saying earlier where you would make it like you're serving the smoothie, right? There was an issue there.
Yeah, so well, for the machmir. Yeah, right. Rebelsky's an OU guy, so.
He's
I'm still confused. Like, it's you're not being mevatel any iser, right? The milk goes into the coffee and is batel.
Ah, right. This is better than the bugs, right? Anyways, this is better than the bugs. By the bugs, you're being mevatel an iser, right? The bug, in essence, is mutter. Even if it's crushed up, it's usser, right? It's still usser to eat a tiny bit of thing. You're just being mevatel in the rest of the thing.
Right.
Here, there's nothing even usser involved, right? The cassinade is mutter, the creamer is mutter, the coffee is mutter. It's just not mutter for you now because you happen to be fleishigs. But that's okay. The only part that is usher to me now is now hereby being batel, right? I am making the coffee for me. Yeah, but I could be doing the same exact thing and making the coffee for somebody else, right? And that would and therefore that would not be an issur of in batlin, issue of in batlin and sofafila. Essentially,
you're not really nullifying the dairy. It's null. It's nullified once we're actually taking a drink from it.
Okay. Yeah.
But like you're not.
Right,
like you're not doing
right. In batlin and sofafila is an issur, right? It's something you're not allowed to do. So. But here, there's no isser involved when you're doing it. That's how Rebelsky would say. Well, you couldn't pour the dairy creamer into your cholent. You could. You could pour the coffee into your cholent.
Yeah.
Right, right. I think he would say, I guess you could. Right, that you could do, but you couldn't make the coffee to pour into your cholent. Right, so that's pretty. Right, that is pretty wild. Some do point out that could be the Rav Soloveitchik would paskin against this way, because he assumes that the why exactly are you waiting from milk to me? I tried finding this today in the Shiurei Harav. I couldn't locate it. But the assumption here is that it's an Isser Chefza, right? That you're not going to mix milk and meat, and by putting in the milk into the meat, you're by putting this tiny thing in, you're now being mevatil, so therefore you don't have to worry about mixing milk and meat. The Rav had some kind of situation, some setup where he made it into a, it's actually, the whole thing's an Isser Gavra. So therefore you yourself are fleet, I don't remember how it played out, but you could track down, I'm not sure if I ever did it online, but there are shirim online that quote this, that point out that Rav Soloveitchik potentially disagreed with this issue. It's getting late. Do we have a deadline on this? What do we...
Usually we finish by 30, but the Olam is okay.
Okay.
Another few minutes.
Okay. Another. So I'll throw in two more things. Number one is the so there is a Gemara in Beitza, which this is Sifav. The Gemara in Beitza does have a line that says Ein Mevatel and Isser Chachila when it comes to Dini Derabanan. That's what the Gemara says. So Tosfos there is like we have a lot of cases where it seems like it's talking about Dini Derabanan where it seems like it's not allowed. So what's going on there? So the case in Beitza happened to be an issue with regards to Muksa. So Tosfos there says no, I'll tell you the difference. The difference is when it comes to something that is an Iker Derabanan, meaning Muksa is like just a Din Derabanan, like it's not really a Gezerah Atu Deoraisa, it's just a Derabanan Din. Says there will be Mekel. But any time that it's a din derabanan that is really playing off of the Deoraisa, so you're going to have to be machmir. The Rashba, however, gives a different answer, and the Rashba is really what's quoted in Shulchan Aruch. The Rashba says that that if you're doing it biyadayim, it becomes that would be an iser to put the iser in. That would be a problem where you already have a mixture and you're just adding something in. So the Rashba says that would be permissible. So that's what's quoted here in Shulchan Aruch, right? Iser shel devarim in ma'arno so biyadayim k'dei levatlo v'im asa kein b'mezid. Then it's going to be aser. Achel aval im nafal miyaspul falls in the ein beheter k'dei levatlo and there's not enough heter to levatel it. You could add more things in order to levatel it. I don't believe that the Ramah is even more machmer than that. Then fine, but that's the machaber. So some point out that there's a stira between the machaber here versus the machaber in Hilchos Chanukah. So towards the end of Hilchos Chanukah in Simon Tuf Reish Ayin Zion. Assuming I wrote that in the right direction. Tafri Shai and Zion, right? So there he says that at the end of Hanukkah, so any oil that was not burnt up, That doesn't mean any oil that was, for, that's a Hilchos Chanukah. So basically, any oil that was still considered to be hektish, you're not allowed to use for other things. Rather, you have to burn it all out. And the Mechaber even says, and even if additional oil got mixed into it, you're not allowed to take additional oil and be mevatel it, which seems to be against this din, because the whole thing's only a din d'rabanan, and it already is a little bit butl anyways, and now you're adding in more. It seems like that should be what this is suggesting here. So the Chavos Das here in the back of Yerideya, he says, well, I'll give you, there's a distinction. The issue here has to do with achila. The issue in Chanukah has to do with Hana. When it comes to Hana, so it could be that the Rashba wouldn't be Machmer there, and for that reason the Mechaber is Machmer when it comes to the leftover Chanukah oil. Of course, it's only oil that was supposed to be burnt and wasn't burnt. It was supposed to be burnt Ayidei Mitzvah and wasn't burnt. So it's not really so applicable, assuming that your menorah burnt for a requisite amount of time. But I'll give one more, and I was very excited about finding this, just because, I couldn't find anybody else that talked about this. It happens to be, I give a shir Monday night in my shul, called the Shulchan Aruch Shir. We have, Baruch Hashem, been able to cover most of Yerideya already at this point, and we actually just concluded Hilchos Orla. We're like studying the Netherlands of Hilchos Yerideya, like where no man has gone before. That is what I feel. I feel like sometimes, and there is a Beis Yosef here that has the following issue. So, whenever I find it interesting, we had Hilchos Chadash and then Hilchos Orla and Hilchos Kalayim. So all of these are sort of things that there's a difference between Hilchos in Eretz Yisrael versus Chutz La'aretz, and it's interesting because all the Rishonim are dealing with it in Chutz La'aretz, and then the Mechaber is back in Eretz Yisrael, and he's like has to figure out, okay, what exactly of this is applicable in Eretz Yisrael and what is not. But there is a halacha here in Reish Shadi Dalet Sif Yud Zayin. In the Beis Yosef, where he has the following, where he discusses the following issue, right? Orla is something that was grown in the first 3 years. So what about being mevatel Orla, right? If you have Orla, so first of all, Suffolk Orla b'chutz la'aretz is mutter legamri, which is its own chabura on its own. So that's mutter legamri. But he says, but what about the follow? What about, he says, so the tour here says, "Afal pisha minag ovdei adama lahavri chagafan b'chol shana b'shana." That the generally the non Jews they take certain branches of vineyard stuff, and they like sort of mix and mash it every year. So orla applies to orla branches as well. So if it's being started from scratch, if it's being stuck in the ground from scratch, so then the orla clock starts again. So now if you start mixing things around and putting in some orla branches in the middle of the rest of the field, so now you have potentially orla grapes growing within the rest of the field, right? So isn't that a problem? How are you going to keep track? So apparently everybody was makel on this. The Rush points out, I think he's quoting from the Rush, right? That everybody, at least in Chutz La'aretz, everybody's makel on this because we don't know what's what and you can't keep track of what's what and it's non-Jews doing all this stuff anyway, so therefore it's a non-Jewish vineyard. What about the wine issues? No, it's a non-Jewish owned vineyard and the Jews go and take all the grapes, so, or whatever grapes they need, and therefore we don't really have to worry about that. But then he continues on and says, but you know what? I think this would even be applicable. I think this would even be mutter in Eretz Yisrael. Right? He was this then, right? Right. It was here in the Bedek Habayis. He adds in the following idea that he says that I'm taking the bestam orla needs. You need more than shishim to be mevatel orla. You need 200 to be mevatel orla. So he says that how could you then do that in Eretz Yisrael, and even a Jew going ahead and doing that, potentially he thinks even that could potentially be mutter, why would that be okay? So he says, well, it's probably pretty rare that grapes would be born within the first 3 years, which is a little bit suspect. He says, and anyways, this was not a common thing to do, and Eim Mevatlin Yisrael L'Chachila is only a Gezeira. He says it's only a Gezeira that was imposed. Now, that is subject to machlokas, right? There is a shita saraivid that holds that im vatl nisul chachil is nisul doraisa. But we bestam a paskin that im vatl nisul chachil is really a gezeira derabanan. So he says, and anything that is rare, anything that was uncommon for people to do, so in gozrinbo, right? Anything that is a mutter delo shchicha, anything that was something that was uncommon, So we're going to suggest that there was no gezeira that was ever made, which is a pretty wild thing, right? We don't go around with topic by topic and doing that, but they suggest that perhaps is the kula, and therefore it even would be mutter in Eretz Yisrael even by Jews, because hopefully it's less than 1 in 200 anyways. We'll assume that bittul would be taking place. A Jew is taking a stem, is taking a thing and sticking it in, knowing that orla is going to grow. And therefore, you're causing bittul when you harvest it, by definition. He says, yeah, it's okay. In vatan isur chachila doesn't apply to vineyards, because it's a milsa de lo shchicha. It's pretty shayach if you own a vineyard. But that apparently is the big chiddush. Now, he does not quote this in the Shulchan Aruch itself. It was in the Beis Yosef. He didn't quote against it, but he didn't quote for it in the Shulchan Aruch. So anyways, that is the that was the final psak. But it is assumed. I mean, I did find it. I couldn't find it tonight when I was looking around. But Rav Moshe does talk about this. Rav Moshe does say, oh, you don't have to worry about Eim Vatan Isra Chachilu when it comes to Orla anyways, because lo goes in vatan. So that was accepted. I did look around and... Ramosha quotes the principle, right, as being okay. I did... there is in Eretz Yisrael, when you buy wine, it does say v'lo chashash tevel v'lo chashash orla, which there's a famous picture that has gone around, because sometimes they translate things without any concerns of tevel or foreskins. But right, so besides no foreskins, there also is no orla. I don't know if that means that they're excluding this also. I don't know. I don't know if they're relying on that or not relying on that. I couldn't figure out. But as soon as I saw that, I said, ah, Rabbi Blume asked me to give an Eim Vatan Isra Chachila share, so we'll put this down. I couldn't find anybody else really that discusses this, but it is quoted in the Beis Yosef. I thought it's a pretty amazing hara for plenty of for all sorts of reasons. All right. So, anyways, Yeshar Koach. Hopefully, we'll have a chance to do this again sometime. And Yeshar Koach and your limud. Yes.
You brought my opinion with the shach that Leinayda is even on a something that's chanan. We want to know, like, do the first game use this heter? Even though the shach like dismisses it. And the idea of, like, you wouldn't say chanan until you know about it. Until you know that the Isra is in the presence.
Right.
So is that used? Shach, like, dismisses it.
I think so. I mean, the idea of Yediyas HaTeruvah, so Yediyas HaTeruvah will even come into play when it comes to Chanan.
Yeah.
I think we do. The Shach dismisses it. I don't remember the going back and forth.
Oh, yeah.
But again, as I've pointed out, in the Kashrus world, you often, if you're opening a Yoredei Chelek Aleph, you're in trouble, right? The purpose is really to avoid. Yoredei Chelek Aleph is really all about B'dievet things that have happened, right? So I think there's been only one or two Shilohs since I've been running this that have had to actually open up Yoredei Chelek Aleph. Yoredei Chelek Beis, there's plenty of. Or Chaim Chelek Beis, there's a lot of. But in terms of when you're setting up a system to make sure everything is okay, you're hoping that you're not opening a Yoredei Chelek Aleph too often.
So much for coming.
Okay, yes, you're coming.
Have a good game,
another time. All right.